Beloved Master, once a monk asked Fuketsu, "What is the Buddha?" Fuketsu replied, "The bamboo whips of Mount Joran." Another monk then asked, "What is the Buddha?" Fuketsu answered, "What is not the Buddha?" A third monk said to Fuketsu, "The Western Patriarch came bringing his message. I ask you to tell me it point blank." At this, Fuketsu replied, "When one dog barks at nothing, 1,000 monkeys really show their teeth." On another occasion, a monk asked, "What is the meaning of Daruma's coming from the West?" Fuketsu said, "We know all the windings of the mountain stream, but not the mountain itself."
Friends, to Today I'm going to talk first about religion and the crime that it has committed against humanity, nature, environment, ecology. Religion's crimes are many, innumerable. But the worst kind is that it has placed man at the center of existence. It has given the idea to whole humanity that the whole existence is for your use. You are God's greatest creation. A man-oriented vision of existence is bound to create catastrophes in nature. It is bound to destroy the ecological balance. It is bound to give man a strange idea of an ego. The Bible says God created man in his own image, and man has believed it. Just look your face in the mirror. Is the God's face in the mirror? The truth is that Christianity has been befooling humanity. It is not that God made man in his own image. It is man who has made God in his own image. And all the scriptures of all the religions have given man a strange licentiousness over nature, over animals, over birds. That has culminated into destroying many species of animals, birds. It has destroyed millions of trees for no reason. Every second that passes, one football match ground is cleaned of all greenery, all trees. When India became independent, it has 33 million trees. Today it has only 11 million trees. This man-centered view begins with the Genesis in Bible. Genesis, it says, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the air and over every living thing that moveth upon the earth. This is the ultimate crime. that has made man violent against nature, given him the freedom to conquer innocent animals, destroy them, it has made man barbarous. Now we are suffering from all those trees that have been destroyed and that are being destroyed continuously. There is a certain balance in existence. These trees are your brothers and your sisters. There is no question of dominion. You exhale carbon dioxide, they inhale it. They exhale oxygen, you inhale it. Such a deep relationship. You cannot exist without trees. Neither trees can exist without you. Your existence is so deeply rooted into each other. As trees have become lesser and lesser, the level of oxygen in the air has gone down and down and down. Now you are living only a fragmentary life. You may not have thought about it. Why don't you breathe fully? Your lungs have 6,000 holes which have to be filled. But you breathe shallow, only 2,000 holes are filled and 4,000 holes remain stagnant, filled with dead carbon dioxide, which is the cause of millions of diseases. It reduces your life span, it weakens your spirit, it destroys your intelligence. You are living on the minimum. Just because of this statement in the Genesis that you have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the air and over every living thing that moveth upon the earth. Man has killed so many beautiful species of animals just for his food. Has killed so many birds, the whole species have disappeared. In India, the lion was the national animal. But stupid hunters, particularly the British hunters, who have been in power in this country for almost 300 years, they destroyed all the lions, the most beautiful animal in existence. Such a dignity, such a power, such grandeur. And what they were doing, just decorating their sitting rooms with the stuffed heads of the lions. Today the whole species is on the verge of disappearing. There are only not more than 2 dozen lions in whole of India. The Indian government has to change its national animal from lion to tiger. Because lions are going to disappear. One lion dies, it is never replaced. And it is not only the British Christians who destroyed them, even Hindu monks sit on a lion's skin. You will not believe how stupid people can be. Religion seems to give a certain stupidity to people who were born intelligent. The Hindu monks sit on the skin of a lion. Of course, one lion has to be killed for one monk. And the ideology that they preach is, sitting on the lion's skin, you can remain celibate. My foot. Stupidity has a limit. What lion's skin has to do with your celibacy? Lions are not celibate. One has never heard about a lion who was celibate. What scientific proof? Because I don't know a single monk who is a celibate. And I have known thousands of monks, Hindus, Jainas. Just now two books have come out from one of the richest sect of the Jainas, Therapanth. The sect is headed by Acharya Tulsi. 1700 monks are under him and 3 times more nuns. And all are sexually perverted. These two books that have come just out, Acharya Tulsi tried hard the government to ban them. But the publisher of the books is also a follower of the same sect. He knows that what is written in those two books by ex-monks of Acharya Tulsi is absolutely true. He said, I will fight against government and go to the Supreme Court. They cannot prevent a truth. I have been in Acharya Tulsi's camp for 7 days. I could not believe so many monks, so many nuns came in contact with me and they told that such perversity is going on behind the scenes. Even Acharya Tulsi is not an exception. Homosexuality is widely prevalent. Heterosexuality is widely prevalent. Those nuns are used almost like prostitutes. They go on preaching about celibacy, and their own reality is all kinds of perversions. One of the ex-members of the cult had come to me directly when he left the cult. He wanted to write the book. I said, wait a little. Nobody will listen to you. You just make some status about yourself and then write the book. The book is absolutely essential. Because he himself was the victim of Acharya Tulsi's sexuality, not to say of other monks. Beautiful Jaina girls are invited to become nuns, and it is thought, it is preached, it has been propagated for hundreds of years that to become a nun is not to become holy. You bring prestige and blessings to your family too. So when they see a beautiful girl, they invite the family that the girl has such spiritual powers that she needs to be initiated as a nun. The family is happy, the community is happy, the girl is happy that she has been chosen as a spiritual being of tremendous possibilities. But the reality is totally different. She has been chosen because she is beautiful, young, and the monks are sitting hungry. I had made the statement, not a single Indian newspaper had the courage to print it. And when my press office inquired what happened to my statement, I take the whole responsibility about it. You need not be worried. They said, we are feeling very nervous to print it. And it has not been printed. Perhaps they have been bribed by the followers of Acharya Tulsi. Perhaps the government is behind it. Because Acharya Tulsi has a hold of many votes and much money that he manages through his followers to donate to the political parties who are in rule. All religions are sexually perverted. They have to be. Their only creative and positive act through the centuries is AIDS positive. And because the Genesis says, be fruitful, means populate the earth more and more and multiply, not even double, but multiply. That's why the Christian Pope and the bishops and the cardinals and the priests are all against birth control, because it goes against Genesis, their very foundation of religion. This whole population explosion, which is going to kill half of the humanity in utter starvation, Who is responsible for it? Genesis and these stupid bishops and popes and cardinals and priests. You will be surprised to know that as Ronald Reagan came into power, he immediately cut the budget for the poor countries to control their population. Because he was a fundamentalist, fascist Christian. And since he has been in power, he has fulfilled the statement of Genesis, be fruitful and multiply. When India became independent, it was only 400 million people. Now it is 900 million people. And by the end of this century, it will be 1 billion human beings. And after 40 years, it will double. There will be 2 billion people in India. From where you are going to get food? Right now, half of the country is starving. And more than half of the country is undernourished. Even a politician, the chief minister of Haryana, has come with the statement because his state is starving. He has come with a statement that if this situation continues, India will become a subhuman species. It will lose all intelligence, it will lose all strength and power, it will lose all dignity of human beings. It is very rare from a politician to hear the truth. Very rare from a religious man to hear the truth. In his book, In God's Name, David Yalop exposes the corruption of the Vatican. He tells how Pope John Paul, the Pope before this Polak Pope, has ordered an investigation of the Vatican Bank after reports that it was involved in money laundering. The Pope had also made it clear that under his direction the Church would approve of birth control. Suddenly, after these two radical moves, 33 days after being made Pope, this healthy man died of a heart attack. His personal notes, will, and medicine bottles mysteriously disappeared. Before the cause of death could be confirmed, his body was embalmed, a process which makes it impossible to detect the presence of poison. Many people feel he was murdered. The new Polak Pope promoted the same head of the bank of Archbishop. This man who has been the head of the bank, the government of Italy has issued an arrest warrant, but they cannot enter Vatican. Vatican is just in the middle of Rome, the capital of Italy, 8 square miles country. The sovereign head of religion and the country is the Pope. Of course, nobody can enter to arrest and knowing perfectly well that he has to be arrested by the Italian government if he goes out of Vatican, because what they have been doing through the bank, it is the greatest mafia. All the heroin money, not a small account, $600 million per year, they are turning into white money. This is the whole function of the Vatican Bank. And because the previous Pope, Pope John Paul, was a man of intelligence, understanding, with only one fault, that he was a homosexual, but that is natural. As far as popes and bishops and monks and priests are concerned, homosexuality is the natural thing. Before he became Pope, he was the cardinal in Milan. And everybody in Milan knew. It was the talk of the town that he is a homosexual. And openly he used to move with his boyfriend. When he became the Pope, he immediately called the boyfriend and made him his secretary. Except that, which is not abnormal, it is becoming more and more normal. He was a man of great intelligence and he wanted to find out the facts about the bank because it is committing the greatest crime for which millions of young people are suffering in jails. Only after 33 days, this is the least time any pope has been a pope. And he was perfectly healthy. He had no record of any heart diseases. He was found sitting in his bed, dead, clutching a paper in his hand, in which he has written his will and made the points clear that the bank should be completely investigated, and if there is any crime being committed, the person should be punished. And second, the situation has changed completely since the days of Genesis. Birth control should be allowed and all kinds of birth control methods, pills, should be allowed to humanity, particularly to Catholics. It is not the time to multiply. This paper that he was clutching in his hand and he was dead, this paper also disappeared. And they did not get a certificate from a medical expert that he is dead naturally. They immediately embalmed the body without telling anyone. After embalming the body, there is no way to find whether the person has been poisoned or not. As far as I can see, he was certainly murdered, because he was going against the criminal bank and against the criminal attitude of the Christians, that they go on being against abortion, against birth control pills, against any kind of method that can prevent the population explosion. This is not a single case. Who crucified Jesus? The religious rabbis, the arch priest, the arch rabbi of the great temple of the Jews in Jerusalem, they all, without any exception, wanted this innocent young man who was only 33 years old to be crucified for no reason at all. He has not committed any crime. He has not murdered anyone. He has not raped anyone. Even the Roman Emperor of Judea was surprised to know that they want to crucify Jesus. And the Roman governor present in Jerusalem, Pontius Pilate, wanted to free him because he could not see any harm. Perhaps he talks things which Jews don't want to listen. So close your ears and go on your way. Don't listen. But that is not a cultured and human way, that because you disagree with him and you cannot even give arguments to an uneducated Jesus, crucifixion is the answer. But Pontius Pilate hoped that at the last moment, because three persons were going to be crucified, every year when the Jewish holidays start, the criminals who have to be crucified, they are crucified. Three criminals. One was Jesus, who was not a criminal at all. Pontius Pilate was hoping that the archpriest of the temple, the highest post for the rabbis, the learned scholars of Judaism, has the right to release one person from crucifixion. He was hoping that the archpriest will ask for Jesus to be released because he has not committed any crime. But even the archbishop, with all the thousands of rabbis surrounding the temple, shouted that Barabbas, a criminal beyond conception, he has murdered 7 people. He has raped many women. He was a perfect drunkard. He has remained in the jail almost his whole life. Whenever he will be released, within 2 days he was back, he has murdered somebody. He has raped some woman. Now finally they decided he should be crucified, he is incurable. But all the rabbis, including the arch-rabbi, it was a shock to Pontius Pilate, shouted that we want Barabbas to be released. Even Barabbas could not believe. He knew Jesus. Once in a while he has heard, and he has loved the young man. He was talking beautiful things. He had hoped that if he could remain out of jail, he may listen more to this young man. And he has been talking to people only for 3 years. And not many people, because everybody was afraid of the religious hierarchy, that if you are found in company with Jesus, you may be punished also. So only few young people who had the courage and the guts followed him and listened to him. Barabbas, whenever he had the chance to be out of jail, heard him. And when he saw that he is being released, and this poor fellow, with great ideas, with beautiful visions, is being crucified, it is absolute criminal. Even Barabbas said to people, it is absolutely criminal. It was perfectly good for me to be crucified. I have done enough crime. But this young man, he has not even started living. He is only 33. And Barabbas killed, within 7 days, another man. But it was the rule of the Roman emperor that once a man is released from the crucifixion, by the mercy of the emperor, he cannot be crucified again. It is a tremendously dramatic story, far more dramatic than the story of Jesus. Christians say Jesus did many miracles, but no Jewish record exists of the contemporary days recording any miracle of Jesus. If those miracles really had happened, a dead man has been resurrected, water has been turned into wine, with one loaf of bread he fed thousands of people, he walked on waters. Do you think a man like this will go unnoticed by the contemporaries? Not a single mention even of the name of Jesus is mentioned by any contemporary literature. But Barabbas really was a man of miracles. It was a miracle. After committing 7 murders, many rapes, and he is released. And he is asked to be released by the most holy and the religious rabbis unanimously. Is it not a miracle? And after 7 days, it was just his habit. He killed a man, he raped his woman, he was arrested again, but now he could not be crucified. So he was sent to Greece. That was the way. If somebody cannot be crucified, once he has been out of the mercy of the emperor, has been released, was sent to the coal mines in Greece. Those coal mines have become so deep and the technology was almost nil that every month almost thousands of people died because the mine collapsed. And just when Barabbas entered in the coal mine, the 3rd day the mine collapsed. Everybody under the mine, and there were almost 2,000 people, everybody died except Barabbas. Don't you call it a miracle? Even the emperor, Roman emperor, was impressed. His queen was too much impressed that this is the real man of God. So he was called to Rome in the capital. The Olympics were going to begin, and in the Olympics, one special thing was fighting with a living lion who has been kept hungry for many days. He will be released, and the emperor wanted to know whether this Barabbas is really a man of God. So Barabbas was left into the stadium. A hungry lion for many days was released, and Barabbas fought with his totality because there was no need to save anything. The lion is going to kill him. But you will be surprised, he killed the lion. With such totality and such urgency, when life is at the risk, who cares for anything? Even the lion became afraid. And he killed by bare hands. Even the emperor could not believe his eyes. It has never happened before. And the queen wanted at least to touch the robe of Barabbas. So she stood outside the stadium gate. When Barabbas was taken out, she just touched the robe and he said, "You are a man of God." But all these years, he could not forget the face of Jesus. that innocent face, that young face, that peaceful and silent face has been haunting him day and night. So as he was released, the emperor has to release him. He immediately found an underground group of people who has turned to Christianity. He joined the group. And the day he joined the group and accepted a cross to hang around his neck, he was caught immediately and crucified. No miracle happened. He died as a Christian. Why Jesus was crucified? Religion cannot tolerate any man with new visions, with new dreams, with new hopes for mankind, with new promises to be fulfilled. No religion can tolerate anybody who has a new image of man to emerge. They feel hurt. That means their scriptures have been wrong. That up to now what they have been worshipping has been stupid. For this single man, they cannot leave their whole heritage. Although they have no argument against Jesus or against Socrates or against Al-Hillaz Mansur, their only argument is crucifixion. Religion has committed so many crimes for centuries on. Every religion thinks others are wrong. And to put them right, the simple way is to cut their heads. Christians have been killing Jews, Mohammedans. Mohammedans have been killing Christians, Hindus. Hindus have been killing Mohammedans, Buddhists. In the name of God, what kind of God you have got? According to a book by Corrado Baldussi, a diplomat of the Vatican, the devil's army consists of exactly 1,758,640,175 devils. Certainly this Vatican diplomat must have visited hell. And how many people are in the army of God, can I ask? Just those three fellows? God, Holy Ghost, and the only begotten Son, Jesus. Is there any possibility of God winning devil? I will repeat the number so you can remember. The devil's army consists of exactly 1,758,640,175 40,175 devils, there is no hope for humanity. Perhaps that's why God has escaped to some faraway star with his only begotten Son and the Holy Ghost, seeing the situation, one wonders how these people come to these conclusions. This diplomat, if he had been to the hell, in Christianity, you cannot return from hell. Once you are in hell, you are forever in hell. For eternity. How he managed, against his own religion, to come out of hell, and without going to hell, do you think somebody can count this big number? Just sitting in Vatican? And no Christian has even questioned the stupidity of this man. That surprises me. I simply cannot believe. On the one hand, Christianity says, if you fall in hell, finish. The door is closed forever, eternally you will burn into hell fire. It was on this point that one of the most significant thinkers of this century, Bertrand Russell, dropped out of Christianity. On this point particularly, he wrote a book, Why I Am Not a Christian. And the first point is that I cannot conceive in one life, because Christianity believes in one life. In Hinduism, in Jainism, in Buddhism, you can commit millions of sins, because millions of lives are available backwards and millions of lives are available forwards. You can go on doing as many sins. There is no need to count. But in Christianity, in Judaism, in Mohammedanism, there is only one life. In one life, Bertrand Russell asks the question, how many sins I can commit? In fact, he counted that all the sins that I have committed and all the sins that I wanted to commit but I have not committed and all the sins I have dreamt about as if I am committing. Even if all these are considered to be sins, the hardest judge in the world cannot put me in jail for more than 4.5 years. Eternity of hellfire, and I have not committed enough sins yet. This is so absurd that a man like Bertrand Russell's, he has many other points. This is the basic point, that it is absolutely absurd. If you go on committing sins from the time you are born, day and night, till you enter your grave, then too, an eternity of hellfire is not justified. 70 years continuous sinning, without sleeping, without eating. then to 70 years are only 70 years. Even that many sins, although you cannot commit that many sins, you will need some time to eat, some time to sleep, some time to love, some time to go to the movie, and what will happen to television? But Christianity goes on without giving any reasonings, insisting that if you commit sins, how many sins? At least a number should be given. If you commit 1 dozen sins, nothing is said about it. You can commit 1 sin, you can commit 1,000 sins. The punishment is the same. What kind of justice? And these people who have been counting the devils in the Middle Ages, they were killing living demons, calling them witches. The word witch is not a bad word. In its origins, it means a wise woman. But Christianity polluted the world, destroyed its beauty. And what was the process? How to find a witch? How to prove that she is a witch? Because once proved, the only punishment was burning her alive in the crossroads of the main part of the city. A special court was arranged by the Pope to find out all the witches and destroy them, because they are in possession of the devil. Nobody knows anything about God, nobody knows anything about devil. And thousands of demons were burnt alive. How they managed it? A simple process. Anybody could inform, even anonymously, that I suspect a certain woman in my neighborhood is a witch. That woman will be caught immediately by the court, forced into jail, tortured, beaten, sexually abused, I remembered those women. When my back was bad, some 8 years before, a traction machine was brought to pull my body, legs in one direction, head in another direction, to put the backbone straight. That time I remember, this traction machine was invented by the Christians to torture women. And I have known a little bit of torture on that machine. But those women were torn apart. Sometimes legs will come out. Sometimes there was no need to burn them alive, the head will come out. Big rocks of ice will be put on their chest. Unless they confess, there was no way of getting out of the jail. Confess that you are having sexual relationship with the devil. Naturally, anybody would think it is better to confess than to go through all this torture. And this torture will continue until you confess. There was no way out. And the bishops who were torturing them, they will teach them how they have to confess in the court. When they confess that, yes, I have been having a sexual relationship with the devil, then the priest will tell them, you have to tell to the court how you recognize the devil. You have to tell him that he has a forked penis. So he can enter into the women from both the holes. That's how I recognize that it is a devil. Those poor women has to confess this in the court. And the court will ask how you recognize it is devil, not a man. Then they will describe the genital mechanism of the devil. It has certainly to be special, forked. That was enough proof. They created the confession, they created the proof, and the woman was burned alive. They destroyed thousands of women in the name of God. Because the devil has to be destroyed. But now seeing the number of the devils, I don't think just killing few thousand women by burning, you can destroy devil. You are destroying women, the devil will find other women. And so many devils, strange, you should have burned the devil, not the woman. The woman was a victim. The criminal was the devil, but it is a strange logic. The victim is to be burned, because you cannot find devil anywhere. No devil exists, neither any God exists. These are fictions created by the religions to torture humanity, to exploit humanity, to create fear and greed in mankind. And the theology of Christians has not changed. It is still the same. Moses, the founder of Judaism, certainly lied to the Jews that I have been told by God that you are the chosen people in the whole world. And he has told me to lead you to the holy city of Israel. If he has been told exactly the address where Israel is, then why it took 40 years to find Israel? 40 long years of wandering in the deserts of Saudi Arabia. And my feeling, without any doubt, is that what he called Israel was simply to hide the fact that he has lied. Because the Israel is just a poor place, mountainous, not rich, in no way it can be called God's holy place. And Moses recognized it when he left the people he has brought from Egypt. Almost 3/4 of them has died out of hunger, out of thirst, 40 years of wandering in the desert. The third generation of the people have come into being who did not care much about Moses. They don't know anything about who is this fellow. Seeing the situation, he simply told them that this is the place. But life was going to be very hard, harder than it was in Egypt. And for 4,000 years, Jews have suffered more than they have ever suffered in Egypt. In Egypt, they were slaves. But even that slavery was far better than this false promise and hope. And seeing the situation, he must have been taught that these young people don't know me, their fathers or forefathers had come with me. Seeing this hard land, unproductive, they are not going to forgive me that you have led us to this place. Just as an excuse to escape from Egypt, he said, one of our tribes has got lost into the desert. I am going to find it while you manage the holy land of God. And he came in search of the lost tribe which has come to Kashmir. And they had settled in Kashmir. Kashmir looks like a holy place. The first Mughal emperor Babur, when he came to conquer India, he has to enter through Kashmir. Looking at the beauty of Kashmir, he said, if there is any paradise, it is here. It is here. Moses came back to Kashmir. His grave is in Kashmir. And because he has given a false idea of superiority, Jews have suffered immensely. Their suffering has not come yet to an end. whole responsibility goes to Moses. Religious founders have been lying in every possible way. He lied to his people that on the Sinai mountain he has seen God, and God has given him 10 commandments. Nobody has seen God. Just think of yourself. If by chance you come across God, what you are going to do? Hit him hard and kill him. Because all the suffering that humanity has been going through for centuries and centuries is the responsibility of the God who created man, who created the world. What was the need? Existence was perfectly silent and beautiful. What was the need to create Chinggis Khan and Timur Lane and Nadir Shah? Just between these three, they killed 100 million people. What was the need for creating Adolf Hitler? And strangely enough, he killed the God's chosen people, 6 million Jews in Germany. And he himself proclaimed that he is the reincarnation of a Jewish prophet, Elijah. It's strange. A Jewish prophet killing 6 million Jews. He should have killed Germans. But the problem was, he had the same stupid idea that the Nordic German race is the superior most race. It is born just to conquer over the world. Other races are subhuman. That was the clash. Two chosen races cannot live together. Their egos continuously get into conflict. And all these religions say there is only one God. And one God creates 300 religions just to fight with each other. The God must be mad if he exists at all. I feel it is better that we should trust Friedrich Nietzsche's declaration that he is dead, because to be dead is better than to be mad. At least you died in full sanity. My feeling is he committed suicide. Seeing the situation, what a mess he has created. In India, God created the world. This is especially for the self-styled cultured city of Pune. God created the world. The first thing he created was a woman. The woman that he created was his daughter, but he became infatuated. He wanted to rape his own daughter. The woman became so afraid that she ran away and became a cow. Many women do that. It is nothing special. God, seeing that the woman has become a cow, immediately became a bull. And this is how the woman went on slipping from one body into another body. And God went on running after her, becoming another male of another species. That's how all the species are created. This is great religion of the Hindus, a cultured race, the most ancient religious people of the world. Even their god is a gunda, a hooligan, a rapist, and they call themselves culture. These self-styled, so-called cultured people should look into their own scriptures. And they will be surprised one of their reincarnations of God is Parashuram, perhaps the most violent man in the whole history of mankind. His father was a Hindu seer. I sometimes beat my head. A Hindu seer. And in his old age, is still jealous about his beautiful wife. No evidence. But Hindus believe that the moon is a god, the sun is a god, the old seer, father of Parashuram, the name Parashuram came to be, I don't know what was his original name, because Parasu is a special kind of swar, very heavy. Not as much long as a swar, almost half the size, but broad enough. A single blow, it is so heavy that a single blow is enough to take your head off. Because he continuously carried a Parasu, he became Parashuram. His father one day called him that, I suspect your mother. She is having a love affair with the god of the moon. When I go to take my bath early in the morning, 3 o'clock, the moon comes and makes love to your mother. I cannot tolerate it, because I have always found whenever I go to the river, the moon hides into the clouds. I know perfectly well where he has gone. Just idiots you call seers? They don't even know that if a moon falls in love on a woman, the woman will be finished. You will not find even a fragment of the woman. It is so big. It is 1/8 of the planet Earth. No woman can make love to 1/8 size. And how she is going to find where is his mouth, where are his hands? And in the small hut of the Hindu seer, how the moon can enter? But still nobody has condemned Parashuram's father that he was a blind man, utterly blind, and you call him a seer. So blind with jealousy, so enraged that he was almost insane. The reality was that he has married a young woman, very beautiful, and he was old and finished. He ordered Parashuram that you go. This is the order of your fathers, and obedience is the greatest religion. Cut the head of your mother and bring it before me. And Parashuram is called to be one of the reincarnations of God. And even he could not see that it is all nonsense. How the moon can come and I am always here? You go to the river, and if the moon comes, I will chop his head. But he did not say anything. He simply went inside the hut and cut the head of the poor woman and brought the head. The father was absolutely satisfied, and because he obediently went even to cut the head of the mother without even asking a single question, Hindus have accepted him as one of the incarnations of God. Pure obedience. Pure obedience or pure slavery? Pure obedience or pure stupidity? And because the moon is thought by the Hindus and the sun also to belong to the race of the Kshatriyas, the warriors. Hindus cannot think without bringing their caste system. So the Surya, the sun, and the moon, both are warriors, Kshatriyas, below than the Brahmins. And Parashuram was a Brahmin. And he was so angry with the moon that he decided to kill all the warriors of the country. And this man is thought to be reincarnation of God. What other warriors of the country has to do with his mother or his father? And the strangest story is that he was a man of tremendous power, 16 times he destroyed the whole race of the warriors of this country. His whole life was wasted in killing, continuously killing single-handedly. 16 times. From where? Then the Kshatriyas have come. He has destroyed 16 times. You need to destroy 16 times. One time would have been enough. All the Kshatriyas are killed. How you manage to get them killed 16 times? That is another vulgar story of Hinduism. Hinduism allows its seers. On the one hand, they are talking about celibacy, raising celibacy as the highest religion, and on the other hand, they allow the seers, the great saints, if any woman comes to you and asks for a child from you, you cannot refuse. That's how, because Parasuram did not kill the women. The seers must have a good, jolly life. Thousands of women, wives of kings, daughters of kings were coming to them on their own accord, praying to be given a child by them. What kind of seers? These seers seems to be male prostitutes. And they are giving free service to all and sundry. That's why the country is so big. Parasuram may be killing in the south, in the north. New children are born. By the time he is finished in the south, again a new race of the warriors has arisen. By the time he finishes the north, the east, the west, his whole life. And there were so many seers, perhaps many would have been pretending to be seers. Such a good chance. These vulgarities, these obscenities, nobody mentions. Because they will destroy the ego of the country. This is the country of the pious, of the spiritual, of the religious. Can you think these seers can be called seers? They have seen the truth. They have become awakened. And Parasuram himself is the most unconscious human being. Without any reason, just because Hindus believe that the moon is a warrior, all warriors should be killed. And he must have created the whole country in a whorehouse. But still he is recognized to be one of the incarnations of God. In India, for almost 10,000 years, That is the calculation of the modern contemporary scientists. Christians never believed in 10,000 years because of their Bible. Their Bible says God created the world only 4,000 years before Jesus was born. That means 6,000 years only from this moment. So everything has to be put in the framework of 6,000 years. So the first, that Rig Veda was written at 5,000 years before, they cannot go beyond that. But scholars have found that Rig Veda was written 90,000 years before, with a solid evidence which cannot be argued against. Rig Veda describes a certain constellation of the stars which happened only 90,000 years before. Unless these people who have been writing Rig Veda has seen the constellation, it has not happened again. It is absolutely certain that these people has watched the constellation and they have described with minute detail in the Rig Veda. But 90,000 years is a long story, and nothing is written about it. Most probably, the Sati Pratha, when a husband dies, the wife should also jump in the funeral pyre. It is as old as Rig Veda. If Rig Veda is 5,000 years old, then it is 5,000 years old. If it is 90,000 years old, it is 90,000 years old. For 90,000 years, how many million women, sometimes very young, just married a week before or maybe a day before. Even the marriage is not consummated, because in India, even children used to be married, even they are married now against the constitution and law. Even children who were in the mother's womb were married. Just two friends will decide that if my wife gets a boy and your wife gets a son, or vice versa, they will be married. This is decided. The marriage is final. But you cannot send a one-year-old girl to the husband's house, but she is married. The marriage may never be consummated. The girl may be 5 years old and the husband may die. In fact, more possibility of dying than being alive. In the ancient India, up to the beginning of this century, out of 10 boys, 9 boys were dying. And if you are marrying children, the wife has not even seen her husband, but if he dies, she has to jump in the funeral pyre. I have been asking the Shankaracharyas, the Hindu religious leaders, that if you think that it is a great spiritual phenomenon that the wife should die alive, jump in the funeral pyre, why no man has done such an spiritual act? Only women are to be spiritual and men have to be bulls. I have seen with my own eyes alive women burning. It is such horrible experience to see, because living woman tries to run out of the funeral pyre, she is alive, and Brahmins are standing all around with big torches to force her back into the funeral pyre, not to be seen. So much purified butter, ghee, is poured on the funeral pyre, it becomes almost a cloud of smoke. You cannot see what is happening inside the cloud. Inside the cloud of the smoke are standing the priests with burning torches to push the woman back into the funeral pyre. And outside there is so much music, bands, noise, that nobody can hear the woman praying, screaming, shouting, help me, save me. Nobody can hear. All around there is going a ceremony because one woman has become spiritual. I have been asking, nobody has answered. I am perhaps the only man in the world who has not been answered on a single point. I have been to so many Shankaracharyas, there are 8, one for each direction. If spirituality is so easy, just jumping into a funeral pyre, why not man has attained such spirituality? And they are dumb. They don't have any answer. They have only one answer, to condemn me. But the fact is clear. It is a male chauvinist country. All religions are male chauvinists against women. I have been in such horrible nightmare situations. I have seen women burning and I have looked how they have managed it. One layer, great music, loud music, another layer, another circle inside it, great reciting of Vedic scriptures, then the third layer, which is almost hidden in the cloud that the purified butter has produced. Priests, should I call them priests? They are the butchers. They are standing around the funeral pyre with burning torches, forcing the woman who is running here and there, trying to find a way. But there is no possibility. This you call spirituality, forcibly killing a woman. But the reason is man's possessiveness. And all religions are male chauvinistic, they are in favor of men. Man wants to possess the wife while he is alive, and he wants to possess her even when he is dead. He will not leave her alone to have some love affair with anybody else. But as far as man is concerned, I have seen in the funeral pyres, the wife is burning and the husband is talking with people. Do you have some idea of a beautiful girl? I want to be married again. Just on the spot, they cannot even wait for 2-3 days. At least let the fire disappear. Let the woman's body be burned completely. No, exactly on the funeral pyre, around people are sitting and discussing which girl will be suitable for the person. And the person may be old. It does not matter. A 50-year-old person may marry a girl of 16-year age. The crimes against humanity are immense. The crimes against nature, all the people who have been eating meat, don't think for a single moment it is coming from a living being. Just for your taste, you are ready to kill anybody. What is wrong about the cannibals? One of the men who was caught by the cannibals but somehow escaped told me that I had to eat the breakfast because I am too thin. That's why I could manage to escape. They were feeding me and preparing me. Unless he becomes fat enough, there is no point to make a soup of him. That gave him time enough. But meanwhile, he has to eat human meat, human flesh. And he told me that I hate it, but I cannot resist to tell you the truth, that it is the most delicious thing in the world. Just because it is delicious, will you start eating human beings? Just because it is delicious, you have been eating all kinds of animals? That's what the Bible allows you. Birds in the sky, fish in the waters, animals in the forest. You are the only king of this whole nature. Conquer, eat, enjoy. Just to destroy the animals, finally man has to start living on fruits, because there were not animals enough. There was a stage when man was a hunter. There were no settlements. People were continuously moving. Wherever the animals were moving, the animals were escaping from human beings. But when they found the scarcity of animals, they started eating fruits. They started cultivating. For cultivation, they had to cut trees. Trees which grow in 200 years or 300 years. There are trees which grow in 4,000 years. They destroy those beautiful species forever. And they continued to produce more and more population. And the need for more land forced them to cut more trees. And without trees, the oxygen layer on the earth has fallen too much. We are living on the minimum. There are strange catastrophes which will be called natural, but they are not natural. For example, in Nepal, it is one of the poorest country in the world. They have sold their trees to Soviet Union. Millions of trees have been cut. The contract still remains intact for coming 30 years. And Soviet Union does not use axes to cut the trees. It has very refined technology. In a day, it can cut thousands of trees. Within seconds, trees which have grown in 300 years will fall down. The whole Himalayas surrounding Nepal has become naked of foliage. And because of that, the Ganges used to flow slowly, because there were so many trees, they were a kind of hindrance. The Ganges were coming slowly, slowly, slowly to meet the ocean in Bangladesh. Now there are no trees. The floods come with such tremendous speed that this year 3/4 of Bangladesh was flooded. It is also a poor country. Millions of people died. Millions of houses were simply gone into the ocean. Now Bangladesh cannot do anything. And if you ask Nepal, the king says, my people are so poor, we don't have anything to sell. We have only trees. and I have to feed my people. It is not my problem what happens to Bangladesh. Next year, perhaps the whole of Bangladesh will be gone into the ocean. And how long Nepal can live by selling its trees? In 30 years, Soviet Union will take every single tree out of Nepal. And then comes a great danger if the eternal ice of the Himalayas starts melting. Because trees were shedding the snows from the sun rays. Thick trees, big trees, and the snow in the Himalayas have never melted. It is eternally there. But now there are chances you will see a tremendous flood, and there is no Noah's Ark anymore available. If Himalaya melts down, all the oceans around the world will rise 40 feet high. Bombay will be drowned. New York will be drowned. They will be all within the ocean. Cars will not be of any help. Boats. And you cannot survive if 40 feet high all the oceans rise. And you will call it natural catastrophe? I don't call it natural catastrophe. I call it man-manufactured catastrophe. And the religious leaders have not doing anything to prevent all these catastrophes coming. Population goes on growing, lands become poor and poor because they have been cultivated for thousands of years and they have not been nourished. And I told you, just in the beginning of this century, 9 children were dying out of 10. Now the situation is just the opposite. 1 child dies out of 10. 9 children go on living because of medical facilities. We have disturbed the whole ecology of the earth. Who is responsible? Certainly, religious people who should have warned humanity not to grow population, but they all are in favor of population. Even Indian religious heads are against population control. Because they need more and more members to their organizations, to their churches. They are not concerned at all about the whole planet Earth getting destroyed by our own hands. And these so-called religious people are such a lying gang of criminals. Just today I received my birth chart from Bombay will be drowned, New York will be drowned, they will be all within the ocean, cars will not be of any help, boats, and you cannot survive if 40 feet high all the oceans rise. And you will call it natural catastrophe? I don't call it natural catastrophe. I call it man-manufactured catastrophe. And the religious leaders have not doing anything to prevent all these catastrophes coming. Population goes on growing, lands become poor and poor because they have been cultivated for thousands of years and they have not been nourished. And I told you, just in the beginning of this century, 9 children were dying out of 10. Now the situation is just the opposite. 1 child dies out of 10, 9 children go on living because of medical facilities. We have disturbed the whole ecology of the earth. Who is responsible? Certainly religious people who should have warned humanity not to grow population, but they all are in favor of population. Even Indian religious heads are against population control. Because they need more and more members to their organizations, to their churches. They are not concerned at all about the whole planet Earth getting destroyed by our own hands. And these so-called religious people are such a lying gang of criminals. Just today I received my birth chart from one newspaper, Veer Arjun. The astrologer is K.A. Dubey Padmesh. I don't know my own birth chart from where this man has got it. Nobody knows my birth chart. It has never been made. I was born in such a small village where there was no airport, no railway station, no buses reaching to the village, no roads, just 200 simple villagers living There was not any astrologer to make my birth chart. From where these so-called religious people. Astrology is part of Hindu religion. From their own imagination, they managed to make my chart. I have come across many charts. Along these 30 years, at least 24 birth charts I have come across. They are invented by astrologers, I don't know from where. And then they interpret it. They invent the chart and then they interpret the chart. They don't even ask me. I don't have a birth chart. But lying has penetrated the religious people so deeply. And fundamentally, what the great stars have to do with an ordinary human being like me? All these stars are deciding my fate. I am not a puppet. Once it happened in Jaipur, the capital of Rajasthan, used to have one of the very famous astrologer to the king of Rajasthan. I was staying with the king. He called his astrologer because I had no birth chart. The astrologer said, there is no problem. I will read your hints. The king told me it is a very costly man. But I will pay, don't be worried. I said, no. Leave it up to me. Don't interfere, just keep quiet. He used to get 1,000 rupees for one reading. He did the reading and then he waited for 1,000 rupees. I said, you are a great man of predictions, you know everything. You don't know, I am not going to pay. He said, what? I said, yes. You wasted my time. You have to pay me. He said, this is too much. If you don't want to pay, it is okay, I will go. But you are asking me to pay. I said, you have been holding my hand. I don't allow anybody to hold my hand. You have been talking nonsense and wasting my time. I told the king of Jaipur that tell this man 1,000 rupees he should put here. The king said, he is a poor Brahmin. I will give you 1,000 rupees. I said, it does not matter because money is money. You put 1,000 rupees here. The king has to put 1,000 rupees. I returned him back. I said, I don't need, for the time being, sometime I need, with interest. And you call this idiot, and you told me that he is the greatest astrologer in my kingdom. But religion has been lying in every possible way, exploiting people in every possible way. Unless religion dies, the true, authentic religiousness cannot be born. A little biographical note before I talk about the sutras Manisha has brought. These sutras belong to the world of Zen. To me, Zen is the only authentic religiousness. It has nothing to do with Buddhism. It has nothing to do with Taoism. In fact, it is a rebellion against the traditions of Buddhism and traditions of Taoism. But it has carried the essential message of Buddha. It has discarded all that was mere commentary. It has cut all rubbish out of the way. The very essence of Buddha's experience, and that is also the experience of Lao Tzu. Of Tao. Zen is paving the path for the future humanity of one religiousness. Zen is the only authentic goal that has come out of the whole past of humanity. My love for it is not in vain. I am trying to help you understand Zen for a particular purpose, because you are going to be the new man. You are going to create a new humanity, a new world, which essentially is growing towards Buddhahood. The Buddha is nothing to do with Gautam the Buddha. The Buddha is your very nature. It means the awakening. You are unconscious. Deep underneath your unconsciousness, there is hidden a flame of awareness, alertness. That flame is Buddha Dharma. That is your very nature. You don't have to go anywhere to find it. You have to go inwards. No church, no organization, no religion, just a quality of religiousness. And what is the quality of religiousness? The quality of religiousness is to be centered in your witnessing being. Out of that witnessing, a great awareness arises in you, The spring comes to your life and thousands of flowers of compassion, of love, of blissfulness. All around, the fragrance of the ultimate surrounds you. This is a small biographical note about Phuketsu, a Zen master. Phuketsu, who was born in 896 and died in 973, first studied the Confucian classics. Confucius is not a religious man. Confucius is just a moralist. Confucius is just a parallel to Karl Marx. It is not coincidence that China has turned communist. Because Confucian ideology paved the way. All that matters is right manners, right morality, right etiquette. No mention of spirituality. Only social behavior. No mention of your individual death. Confucius is one of the most confused men that has born in the world. Phuketsu first studied the Confucian classics, then became a priest. Later he learned from Kyoshi, the disciple of Seppo, and then finally he went to Nan-in, one of the greatest Zen masters, through whom he realized his enlightenment. Studying Confucian classics, he must have understood that he deals only with the outer world, society, social manners. This is not my search. I want to know myself. I want to know what is my being, in what way my roots are connected with the cosmos. From where comes my life and to where it goes. Whether there is something more than the body and the materials that constitute the body-mind system, or there is nothing except this body which will be put on a funeral pyre or in a grave and will disintegrate into the earth, into its basic elements. I am reminded of a disciple of Confucius. He asked him, I have heard too much about Lao Tzu, they were both contemporaries. Sometimes it happens, almost like a chain reaction. In China, there was Confucius, a great thinker, but materialist. Lao Tzu, a great Buddha. Chuang Tzu, Li Tzu. In India, there were Gautam Buddha, Mahavira, and 6 others whose scriptures had been burnt by the Hindus, whose statues had been destroyed, just their names remain in the works of Buddha or in the words of Mahavira. At the same time, in Greece there was Socrates, Heraclitus, Dionysius, Diogenes. Suddenly, the whole world was afire with a new insight. Confucius' disciple asked him, "You must have heard about Lao Tzu. He talks about a space inside where there is only peace and nothing else, utter silence and no disturbance. Will you teach me how to enter inside?" Confucius was very angry. He said, "Stop all this nonsense. Learn the morality, the virtue, avoid the sins, behave like a gentleman, learn the manners of the society. As far as your inner world is concerned, when you die, you will have eternity for you in the grave. You can search and meditate and find what is inside. But right now, don't waste my time." That was his attitude. But by and by, many people talked about Lao Tzu. Finally, he gathered courage. He was very much afraid, because the stories that he has heard about Lao Tzu were so strange that the man can do anything. He rides on a buffalo, facing backwards, a dangerous fellow. But the more he wanted to avoid him, the more he became interested. That's how human mind functions. Whatever you want to avoid, you will come across again and again. You will become enchanted. Finally, he decided to meet him. He was not far away, just outside the capital in the mountains in a cave. He went there, he stopped his disciples who has followed him outside the cave, because he was afraid that man can do anything, he may hit me, and I don't want to see my disciples, what happens to me. He said, "I will tell you, first let me go and encounter that man." Lao Tzu was sitting in the deep cave in darkness, very silently. He did not bother at all whether Confucius has come. He did not say hello to him. He did not say, "Sit down, please." He did not take any notice. Confucius said, "This is strange. At least you should behave like a gentleman." Lao Tzu said, " I thought that you will not have the guts to enter into my cave. Here we don't teach morality or gentlemanship. Here we teach how to die and get resurrected. Are you ready? Looking at his eyes and Lao-tzu pulled his sword, Confucius said, please forgive me, I will never come in your cave. Perspiring, and the cave was very cool. He came out and he told his disciples, this man is dangerous. He is a dragon. He would have killed me. He did not understand Lao-tzu at all. He was not talking about ordinary death. He was talking about the death of the ego. And unless the ego dies, you are not your authentic self. You are not your original face. Confucius missed. Fuketsu must have understood that these classics are not going to help me. He dropped Confucius and became a priest. But becoming a priest, worshipping statues and doing rituals does not help either. The statue is as outside you as anybody else. It does not lead you inwards. All your prayers, all your rituals are based on a fundamental lie, the existence of God. Finally, he became disappointed with being a priest either. He came to Kyoshi, a Zen master, the disciple of Seppo, another great Zen master. But Kyoshi told him that Nan-in is still alive. When the great Buddha is still alive, why bother about small people like me? I can teach you. I can help you. But my first help is go to Nan-in. I am just a small pond. He is the very ocean. You cannot see the further source. This is the beauty of Zen. No other religion will send anybody to another master. There is conflict, competition. Everybody wants to be the greatest one. If somebody has come, he will grab him. He will not allow him to go anywhere. He will take a promise that you surrender to me. Zen never wants anybody to surrender. No contract. Out of your freedom you come. Out of your freedom you learn. Out of your freedom you grow. Out of your freedom is going to happen your enlightenment. This is not an exception. It is almost the rule. If a master looks into the eyes of a disciple, he can see who will be the right master to this man. And he will direct him to the right man. And when a man like Nanin is alive, why not take the chance and the opportunity? It comes very rarely into centuries. Centuries pass. Then only you come across a man like Nanin. So he went to Nanin, through whom he realized his enlightenment. This is just a biographical note of Phuketsu. He stayed with Nanin for 6 years and then became head of the temple at Mount Phuketsu, where he remained for 7 years. It has been a tradition in the past in Japan, if a master makes a temple on a mountain and he is enlightened, the emperor names the mountain according to the name of the master. Because Phuketsu has made a new monastery, a new opening, a new space for the seekers to come, the emperor of Japan named the mountain Phuketsu. He was Rinzai's great-grandson in the Dharma lineage. The sutra. Our beloved master, once a monk asked Phuketsu, "What is the Buddha?" Phuketsu replied, "The bamboo whip of Mount Zorin." You will be surprised by the answer. But what he is saying is not exactly what he means. When he says, "The bamboo whips of Mount Zorin." The Mount Zorin was just in front of the Mount Phuketsu. At that moment, a breeze must have passed through the bamboos on the Mount Zorin, and the bamboos must have been making sounds, whipping each other, dancing in the wind, in the sun. At this moment, Phuketsu asks, "What is the Buddha?" Phuketsu was asked by a monk, "What is the Buddha?" Phuketsu replied, "This very moment, to be alert and aware this very moment is to be a Buddha. Just see the bamboos dipping on the Mount Zorin." Zen trust only in this moment. Zen cannot talk about some Gautam the Buddha hundreds of years past. When the bamboo Buddhas are dancing in the air, making great celebrating noises, It is enough to indicate to the reality this moment. That was Buddha's essential message, to live in the moment. Never in the past, never in the future. To live in the moment and you have become a Buddha. To be here and now and you are a Buddha. Another monk then asked, what is the Buddha? Because he could not understand what is going on. The man is asking, what is the Buddha? And you are talking about the bamboos. So he again asked another monk, what is the Buddha? Fukesu answered, what is not the Buddha? This is a tremendous answer. What is not a Buddha? Buddha is the very nature of existence. From the smallest grass leaf to the biggest star, everything is intrinsically, potentially a Buddha. Some Buddhas are asleep. There is no harm in it. Some Buddhas have awakened. There is no glory in it. Just take care. When you are sleeping a Buddha, don't snore. Because that disturbs other sleeping Buddhas. Not to disturb anybody, not to interfere in anybody's territory. That is the only virtue I know of. There is not much difference. I was asleep yesterday. Today I am awake. Today you are asleep. Tomorrow you may be awake. Or perhaps today. The Buddha is our intrinsic nature. Hence, Fukesu has made one of the most significant statements. What is not the Buddha? You tell me. You ask me, what is Buddha? Are you mad? Life itself is Buddha. Existence itself is Buddha. Yes, Buddha are found in two categories. Few are asleep, maybe tired of many, many life circles, many, many births, many, many deaths, resting. But few have rested enough. They are tired of rest. So they get up. But there is no essential difference. Buddha awake, Buddha asleep. Both are Buddhas. Neither sleep can disturb your nature, nor awakening can enhance your nature. Yes, asleep you don't know who you are. Awake, not only you know who you are, you know the whole existence, its intrinsic quality, that of Buddhahood. Once you become a Buddha, suddenly the whole existence is a fire of awareness. Great is the answer of Fuketsu. What is not the Buddha? A third monk said to Fuketsu, the Western Patriarch came bringing his message. I ask you to tell me it point blank. He is asking about Bodhidharma. That is a constant questioning in the Zen world. Why Bodhidharma had come from India to China? What was his message? At this, Fuketsu replied, when one dog barks at nothing, 1,000 monkeys really show their teeth. A strange answer. But significant. He is saying, why you are bothered about these things? Bodhidharma had come to China to bark. All the Buddhas are doing exactly that, barking at sleeping people. Sleeping people means monkeys. When one dog barks at nothing, you must have seen dog barking at nothing. Great Buddhas. Because Buddha's only message is nothingness, or more point blank, nothingness. You are not a thing. You are not a commodity. You are beyond thingness. You are a light unto yourself. When one dog barks at nothing, remember clearly that Zen accepts that dogs has as much Buddha nature as you have. Every living being, the very life, is essentially hiding the Buddha in itself. When one dog barks at nothing, 1,000 monkeys really show their teeth. When one Bodhidharma comes to China and barks, thousands of monkeys become Buddhists. But they have not understood the message. They laughed at the Bodhidharma barking at nothing. They enjoyed. For them, entertainment is enlightenment. Monkeys are, after all, monkeys. But what he is saying about humanity. If you are not a Buddha, forget all about humanity. Of course, you have the body of the human beings, but inside, look at your mind, it is a monkey. Only a Buddha it stops the monkey completely. Only a Buddha lives in a no mind. And no mind makes you authentically human, authentically existential, authentically part of the cosmos of eternity. You disappear in the ocean of existence, and that is the greatest blessing, the greatest ecstasy. On another occasion, a monk asked, what is the meaning of Bodhidharmas coming from the West? The same question. Pukesu said, we know all the windings of the mountain stream, but not the mountain itself. You have to note the fact, you can ask the same question to the same master again and again, but you will never get the same answer again. A master responds to the moment spontaneously. He does not repeat from the memory. His response is so pure, everything goes on changing, but your reaction remains the same. Response goes on changing with the changing flux of existence. A master never reacts, he only responds. So the question is the same, but Fukesu's answer is totally different. He says, we know all the windings of the mountain stream. He is sitting on the Fukesu mountain, and a mountain stream is going winding around the mountain. It is a present moment. He says to the questioner, we know all the windings of the mountain stream, but not the mountain itself. To know the mountain, you will have to become the mountain. To know Bodhidharma, you will have to become a Bodhidharma. There is no other way. To know the Buddha, you have to become a Buddha. To be a Buddhist, you are a monkey. You are imitating. Monkeys are very great as far as imitation is concerned. All the so-called organized religions are full of monkeys. Christians are repeating Jesus. Their famous classic is Imitation of Christ. Nobody thinks imitation is an ugly word. It is a very cherished classic of Christianity. Buddhists are trying, imitating to be a Buddha. But by imitating, you can act like a Buddha, but you cannot be a Buddha. If you want to be a Buddha, forget all about Buddhas and Christs and Krishnas. Just be yourself enter into yourself and you will find the Buddha. Not by being a Buddhist, but by just finding your authenticity, your innermost center. Don't be a monkey ever. I am reminded of a beautiful story. A man used to sell Gandhi caps, particularly at election time in India. Gandhi caps are very much in need. Everybody wants to prove that he is a Gandhian. And the Gandhi cap is like a flag showing to everybody that I am a Gandhian. Vote for me. A man used to make Gandhian caps for the election time. And he used to go from market to market selling the caps. It was a good business. The caps were in great demand. One day, he was so tired coming back to home. He himself was wearing a Gandhi cap, and in his bag he was still having many caps left. He was thinking to go to another marketplace, but he was so tired that under a huge Bodhi tree, the same tree under which Buddha became enlightened, that's why that tree is called Bodhi tree. It is named after Buddha. Bodhi means enlightenment. It is a strange tree amongst all the trees. It can grow as huge as you want, because its branches, after a certain length, become too heavy. They will fall down because their heaviness is so much. To protect themselves, they send new roots to the earth. The branches, and when new roots come to the earth, they have a new support. And each branch goes on sending new roots, so there are huge Bodhi trees. One exists in Adyar, in the Theosophical Movement's world headquarters. It is so huge, 10,000 people can sit under it. The Theosophists used to have their meetings under the Bodhi tree. The man did not look at the tree, that it was full of monkeys. He was so tired, he just put his bag by the side and went to sleep. The monkeys looked. They could not resist the temptation of having a Gandhi cap. And they came closer and they found the man is fast asleep. So they pull the bag. Every monkey got one cap. Only one monkey remained. When the man had rested, he looked around, his bag was empty, and he could not see anybody. Then the monkeys started giggling. He looked up, said, "My God, so many Gandhians. Now what to do?" Then suddenly he remembered that monkeys are imitators. So he took his cap and threw it. All the monkeys took their cap and threw. He collected the cap and came back home. Next year he fell sick at the time of elections. So he told his son to go to the marketplaces. He has prepared caps, but remember one thing. There comes on the way a very huge Bodhi tree, which is full of monkeys, and the sad is so cool. After miles of walking, one feels to rest. So I will tell you my experience, otherwise you will be in a trouble. If it happens to you, remember. Don't be worried. Monkeys are imitators. If you went to sleep, go to sleep. If the monkeys take the caps, let them enjoy for a moment. When you wake up, don't be worried. Just throw your cap, and they will all throw their caps. Collect the caps and go home. Boy said, "That's great." In fact, he was looking for the great moment to enjoy. Before going to the market, the father has rested when he was coming back. The boy thought, "Why not rest now and enjoy and then go to the market?" So the full bag, and he went to sleep, and monkeys came down, and they were all beating the caps. The boy looked up, they all giggled. The boy knew the trick. He threw the cap. No monkey threw the cap. On the contrary, one monkey who has not got the cap came down and took the cap and went up. Not only his father has told him, the monkeys also have been told by their fathers that if such a thing happens, don't be deceived. Basu wrote, "Temple bells die out. Have you ever listened to the temple bells slowly, slowly dying out? The sound becomes lesser and lesser and lesser. Are the echo in the valleys goes on dying, and then comes a great silence, greater than it was before the bells were ringing. Temple bells die out, the fragrant blossoms remain, a perfect evening." Basu writes with such a gold touch You can see it exactly, you can hear the bell ringing and dying into deep silence. You can see the blossoms still remain and the fragrance. The silence deepens, the fragrance deepens, a perfect evening. Haikus are, as I have told you, word pictures without painting, just through words. The haiku paints a picture, a very living picture. With the paints, the picture is dead. The poet's great art consists in painting a picture that will remain alive forever. Temple bells die out, the fragrant blossoms remain, a perfect evening. Manisa has asked a question. Our beloved master, are we one with an innate inward propulsion towards self-realization? Alternatively, is the nature of truth such that it attracts that which is of it, or are there altogether different dynamics at play in regard to enlightenment? Manisa, both the things function together. The magnet of your Buddhahood pulls you inwards, and the thirst that is created out of disappointments in life makes you ready to search. You have looked all around and has not found anything. You have been thirsty and thirsty and thirsty, and everything has failed. All promises are broken. Then a moment comes, you start looking inward. You have looked outside enough. Just give a chance to the inner. That idea arises automatically, and there is your innate Buddha pulling you. And once you look inside, both start functioning together, moving closer to each other. Halfway they meet. A Sufi saying says, if you take one step towards truth, truth takes 1,000 steps towards you. No other dynamics is needed. All that is needed, a clarity about disappointment in the outside world. And an intelligence to remind you that you have not searched inwards. Just these two things are needed: a thirsty inquiry, and the Buddha is sitting there like a great magnet pulling you towards him, and also moving closer to you. The meeting is always in the middle. I help you to go inside in search of your inner center, that is the center where you will meet the Buddha. He will come out from the hidden treasure of your being to welcome you at the gate. The center of your being is the gate of the cosmos. It is time for Sardar Gurdayal. In fact, it is late. Father Fungus has accumulated a huge gambling debt and needs some money fast. He has a bright idea for solving his problem. He wires up all the church seats with electricity. The next Sunday, Father Fungus is blasting out his sermon. When he stops and shouts, all those who will give $100 towards the church charity fund, stand up. Fungus touches a button and 20 people spring to their feet. Good, says Father Fungus. Now, all those who want to give $500, stand up. He touches another button and 20 more jump to their feet. Excellent, says Fungus. Now, all those who will give $1,000, stand up. He throws the master switch and 15 visiting Scotsmen are electrocuted to death. Father Fumble is visiting his central Oregonian flock and comes to the sheep segar farm near Fossil. He sees little Becky, the sheep segar's daughter, playing in the front yard and goes over for a chat. Hello, my child, says Father Fumble. May I speak to your father? No, replies Becky, shaking her head. He is in jail for molesting sheep. Really? Exclaims Father Fumble. Then may I speak to your mother? No, replies Becky, shaking her head. She has been taken to the funny farm. She was talking to sheep. Really? Exclaims Fumble. Then may I speak to your brother? No, replies Becky. He is at the university. How nice, exclaims Fumble. What is he studying? He aren't studying nothing, replies Becky. They are studying him. Muffin Snuffler, the White House cleaner, is polishing the floor in the Oval Office one day when he looks up at George Washington's portrait and sees the lips moving. Shocked and a little frightened, Muffin edges closer to the portrait and listens to America's hero speak. Bring me a horse, commands Washington. I am going to put this country in order. Muffin races out of the office and bumps straight into President George Bush. "Mr. President!" "Sir," screams Muffin. "George Washington's portrait just spoke to me." "Don't be an idiot," snaps Bush. "Pictures don't talk." And he walks into the Oval Office and over to the painting, but before he reaches it, George Washington speaks again. "Hey, Muffin," shouts Washington, "I told you to bring me a horse, not a donkey." Nivedana. Close your eyes, feel your bodies to be completely frozen. This is the right moment to look inwards. With your total life energy, with your total consciousness, and with an urgency as if this is the last moment of your life, go as forcibly towards the center as an arrow, piercing all the layers of the body, mind, astral body. Just go to the center. As you come closer to the center, you are closer to the Buddha. As you come deeper into yourself, you are approaching your very being. The moment you reach to the center, a great meeting happens. You and Buddha merge into each other. Just as two lights merge into each other. And a great silence descends. And a tremendous joy arises in you. Remember only one quality that Buddha has. That quality is witnessing. Whatever is happening, just be a witness. Don't be identified. You are not the body. You are not the mind. You are not the astral body. You are not the silence. You are not all those flowers that are sovereign on you. You are only a witness. The witness is the very being of a Buddha. At this moment, I am facing 10,000 Buddhas. Nivedana help them to relax. But remember, to witness everything that is happening within you. Slowly, slowly, you will feel a tremendous melting into the ocean of consciousness that surrounds you. 10,000 Buddhas are melting into an ocean of consciousness without any ripples. Rejoice, cherish. This is the greatest moment of your life. You are the most fortunate people on the earth at this moment. Collect as much fragrance of the inner, as many flowers of the invisible, as much juice of the infinity, of the eternal, as much dawn of existence. Nivedana, come back, but come back as Buddha, with great peace, silence, grace, and sit down for a few moments just to remember the golden path that you have traveled, and just watch every day the distance between you and the Buddha is becoming lesser and lesser. The day your center and your circumference will become one, the day your day-to-day life will also be an expression of your Buddhahood, carrying water from the well, chopping wood for the winter. You will be a Buddha in your meditation, you will be a Buddha in all your activities. That day will be the greatest day in your millions of lives. That day you will be awakened from a coma, from a deep, deep sleep for the first time. For the first time you will know the beauty of existence, its truth, its splendor. And all that remains for you is to share your joy, your ecstasy to friends, to strangers. Accept whole earth becomes filled with the festival of being a Buddha. There is no hope for man. But I trust in the intelligence of existence. You simply spread the fragrance, it will become a wild fire around the earth. One single seed can make the whole earth green. Thank you.
Thank you.